Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
And you're watching Consider This. Joining us on the show today is former Minister Dato' Zaid Ibrahim, who has recently been appointed as the chairman of DAP's Kelantan chapter. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Wonderful to have you here. So, could you explain to us the role? So this is the first time DAP has a chairman or chairperson in Kelantan for their Kelantan chapter. So why exactly were you appointed? What is your mandate in this role?
Why?
Yes.
I was appointed. I wouldn't know. but
And why did you agree to be appointed?
Oh, okay. I'm a party member and... If they feel, the leaders feel that I can contribute, you know, to make the party stronger and to serve at the same time my own political ideas and what I think is important, then I would do it. So I decided to accept that.
How do you understand your role?
Well, my understanding of it is that DAP is perceived, and rightly so, as a Chinese party. And it's not multicultural party that it claims to be. And I'm always against this unitary kind of one-race party. Mm. And, so if DAP is just in name, not able to attract a more diverse group amongst the Malays. Of course, DAP has got Chinese and Indians.
And historically, they had people like Ahmad Noh and so on and so forth.
Yeah,
right?
But the numbers are not adequate, in my view, to alter the character of the party as such. You know? So I think it would be useful for the Malays to be interested in the party. And I thought it would be an interesting challenge for me to explain what the party stands for and what we should be striving for as a group, you know. And Malays are, as you know, Kelantan Malays. They've got many years of UMNO experience and 30 years of PAS experience. And that's all they know. And politics have changed, I think, in my view. And the needs of leadership, of what the services the people expect from political organization dramatically change. You know, people are not impressed with big names anymore or big established parties. You know, people look at, what are you offering? How do you solve this problem? How do you solve this problem? So I think there's a window there for the Malays, Cantonese Malays, to at least listen. I don't know whether they will follow me, but at least listen.
You know, one thing that's it's said about the Kelantan context is that many people who vote in Kelantan don't actually live and work there. Many Kelantanese live in other states or in other countries. They work, you know, famously in places like Singapore and such. Do you think that's shaped their worldview? Or is there a kind of paradoxical situation where while they're very exposed, back home they wanted to remain the same?
Obviously, there's a significant influence of those diaspora when they go back to vote, obviously, you know. They would have a bearing on the outcome. But I think by and large, I think it is not fair to stereotype Kelantanese, you know. I mean, and there are many different groups, different interest groups, you know. Some are interested in business. I think most of them are interested in business. Like in the Klang Valley, if you see a lot of business, restaurants or whatever, even senior civil servants, I mean, the Kelantanese are quite well known for their prowess in some respect. Mm-hmm. You know? So I see them as having very positive traits. So I can't believe people of this group, of this nature, would not want progress, would not want change. And perhaps because they are not, they have not been told the alternative, or they have not been properly given the right options, the right choices to make.
Okay. You know?
So I'm positive about Kelantanese in that sense.
So can I ask if you in this role as chairman of DAP's Kelantan chapter, is that seeding the ground for a candidacy, you know, to be nominated in the next general elections? Are you is DAP looking to field a candidate in Kelantan?
Well, they have fielded before with no success, but I'm not very much interested in that sort of thing. You know, I think I leave it to the party people to decide. I've never been interested in position as such. You know, I think this country needs, from the political side, a lot more educational aspects, understanding the role. You know, we are a young country, and we had some, if I may, after 10, 15 years of independence, then we got May 69, and then we got trauma after trauma. So the foundation of this country is not fully set. Mm. And the foundation is necessary. It's just like a building. You need a proper foundation before you have a strong building. Nation building is the same. I'm more interested in that.
Okay.
And I feel that the reason why we have so much time, we spend almost daily on things like what Ponga, or Lantern, or Jawi.
All the issues
Right? Is because the identity of this country is not known, it's not understood. And or perhaps not accepted. And it is leadership of this sort that's required. And that's what I'm interested in. So,
yeah, on that note, I mean, I want to ask you about the strength of PAS within Kelantan. And a lot of people thought, with the passing of Tok Guru Nik Aziz, that the charisma that PAS had would also leave with him and that PAS would actually be in a crisis. But it's managed to retain its ability to control the state. Where does there's a PAS strength come from? Is it a Kelantanese identity or is it the nature of its machinery?
I think, I mean, obviously religion is a powerful a constituent of this political process, you know, and PAS has used it very well, you know. They have almost identified the party with Islam. It's almost synonymous, you know. And so it's difficult, in a way, to break that, you know. But having said that, I think the imperative, the demands of modern life, the expectation of people to have a better life, jobs, your perot economy or whatever you call it, the education of your children, the quality of water that you get, and all these basic amenities that I think the people, regardless of where you are, will want better improvement, better quality.
Yeah.
So I think there is room for a political organization or party to highlight these issues and tell the people that, look, you elect leaders who can serve you a lot of these things as well, without discarding, of course, religious values and elements, of course. So, of course, it's a challenge, but I believe that it can be done.
Okay.
People can be made to think, or rather to have a slightly open mind about the choices they have.
Okay. All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back and continue this conversation and take a closer look at the identity of DAP. Stay tuned to consider this. Thank you for staying with us on Consider This. Sherrod and I tonight are talking to the newly minted Kelantan DAP chairperson, Dato' Zaid Ibrahim. I read a report in which you were speaking to reporters about after announcing your role that you said, to quote you, "I have decided to help DAP explain to the Malays who are fearful and distrusting of the party that DAP is not racist, extremist or anti-Islam." And I thought that was particularly interesting because that ties into what you said just before the break about the character of this party, that while it's perceived to be, it is perceived to be a Chinese-only party. Now, what your assessment of how you view DAP. What is the character of this party in your eyes?
Well, I can only rely on the documents, the policies they have enunciated over the years. It's a democratic party. It is multicultural. It fights for the rule of law. It's against corruption. I mean, those are the big issues which I think are important. Mm. But unfortunately, in my view, a lot of the Malays, especially in the East, their focus is on something else. They always feel threatened. A lot of their energy and their anger is directed to issues which are, actually, in my view, are not that threatening or not that important. Mm. Issues like, for example, you say DAP is anti-Malay. Well, I don't see any significant proof of that. You know, they may cater for the Chinese more than others, but that's because that's their raison d'etre. I mean, that's how they started. As for the Malays themselves, I think it's such a waste that you are being sidetracked by these people who say you are being attacked by the Chinese, your religion is being attacked by this and that, when they should be focusing on the real issues facing them. And like I said, when they go to school, when they come out, do they get a job? Yeah. Do they have the skill? You know, when they go to the hospital, do they have the medicine? Do they have to wait 2 months or 2 weeks? These are life important issues that I think we should focus on. So the Malay energy, in my view, over the last many years, has, because of PAS and UMNO, has been taken away from the real thing. And I think it's such a shame because I don't see Malays as being racist, you know. I mean, I don't see, when I grew up in the kampung, I don't remember we having such strong aversion towards Chinese or Christian, no. But suddenly, over the last couple of years, that feeling is getting stronger. But that's also because our leadership, in my view, is weak. You know, they don't want to deal with this issue. They don't want to explain to the people what this country is about. I mean, if you want Malays to understand democracy, then you have to explain to the Malays, if we are a democracy to start, then we have to explain that, you know, you have differences of opinion, you have rights, you have things that people do just like you do. You have your own rights, the others too have rights, and you have to be mutual respect. Then you don't have much problem. But we don't explain the fundamentals of this country. Sometimes we are a democracy, and sometimes we are a Muslim state, a Muslim country, but I don't know whether, certainly not the Indonesian model. I don't know, are we an Iranian model? Are we a Saudi model? So the kind of Islam itself is not very clear. Is it enough for some people to make pronouncements and change everything, policies? So that's why we have conflicts. That is why I feel that dissipates your energy. Yeah.
But you know, because another reading is that that's all very cynical, that this, in fact, is a way to mobilize a support, right? So if you're an ethnic leader, you need enemies, you need the other, in order to draw boundaries around your own group, and that this politics of constantly fearing or being suspicious of the other is actually well thought through as a way of maintaining political power. I mean, if that is, and if, I don't know if you agree with that, then how do you work against it? I mean, what exactly can you do?
Of course, I'm sure. I mean, Donald Trump would do the same thing.
Right,
I mean,
and
Donald
it's not Trump. Unique to Malaysia and Malays, right?
Yeah, but that's why I feel that if you care enough about the Malays, then you must address these issues in a rational way. You must address the issues in a way that, if you want them to progress, if you want the countries to progress, the models don't change very much. If you look at a progressive country, the features are like this. You know, and that's how the people live. That's how the community have harmony and peace. But if you want another model, if you think you have a better model, then you must explain the rudiments of that model and see whether it works. Because we don't have a clear identity issue, so every community, every group, or Klantanese or whatever, Indians, you know, we all have our own identity. We live in a silo.
Right.
We protect that identity. And we always feel threatened because we don't understand the whole. So the parts keep clicking with each other. And that takes away the energy of this country. from moving forward because we have no time. We have no time to focus on the real stuff.
So in addressing the anxieties, not just of Malays, but also of other races, addressing those anxieties, do you think it dissipates those anxieties? Because the underlying issue, as you claim, is the lack of a conviction of identity. Is that right?
Yes. I don't think a society can move forward without clarity, without basic principles being agreed within the community. We tried that, as I said. We tried in 1957, in a short term.
Right.
And then we have now a different, later on, it moves to a different kind of explanation as to how we're going to be in one country. And then everybody interprets the constitution to suit their own idea of unit, they even have different version of the constitution or interpretation of the constitution. And then you have a different interpretation of rights, different interpretation of privilege. Until we resolve this, we're not going to look at the economy, the education. We're not going to look at this country moving forward. I mean, why do some factories closed? Recently, we have got factories in the Negrisville and closed now. 168 unemployed people become unemployed. We have to understand why they leave this country. Because if we don't understand why, things will continue. Mm. And the life of the people cannot be better. Mm. The less or
I wonder about strategies. I mean, what kind of strategies are you taking? Right. You talk about reason, and I think,
I think reason is very powerful.
Yes, well, okay.
Is it enough, though?
Yeah, and people will say that, it's on the symbolic level. It is on the... it's about sentiment, and that you have to somehow mobilize alternatives or counter narratives through sentiment.
True. I understand. It is not easy, but I always believe that human progress is possible only if reason prevails. I mean, and it's not always easy because we have been here for thousands of years, and I think we are here today because reason prevails, because facts prevail. The human nature prevails, in my view. I have a lot of faith. The understanding the people have, so long as you can guide them from the excesses of those negative energy, I call them. So I feel that we can be great, of course. But just like you have a football team, you cannot have a football team that has got different style, different features from Barcelona or Liverpool. You must have some of those main things. You can't change. That's the way things are. And this country, until we resolve those uncertainties, and until we are willing to state and paint the big picture and all these issues that we have to address, and I think we have to address openly. No fudging, The problem is, and that's why I don't like position. You see, once you have position, you want to protect the position.
Right. You have that much more to lose, right?
Yes. Mm. Whereas a freelancer like me has a bit more time to talk about what I think should be. But I understand the reality is you still must have some platform.
Sure.
Right.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back on Consider This. Don't go anywhere. Staying with us on Consider This, I'm Lisa Idris, with me Shira Kutin, and we're speaking to former Minister Datuk Zaid Ibrahim. He has recently been appointed as a chairman of DAP's Kelantan chapter. Now, just before the break, you talked about resolving some of the uncertainties, right? That the reasons why we can't seem to focus on structural reform and the real issues of the country. And I'm just wondering what it will take for us to be able to address it openly and to be able to work to a resolution. What does it need? Does it need grassroots will? Does it need political will? Does it need a strong government, a strong leader?
I think it needs many things, of course. You need the right leader, you need a lot of things. But I think we need to be civil first. Civil means we are close, we are kind to others. We don't hit our enemies personally. We don't, you know, we are civil to one another. Because I think the friendship between all these various parties, if their leaders are together, if they're not so acrimonious as we are, as we practice, I think it would help for a start. So I think whilst we cannot say, let's remove all political parties, let's just have one, I mean, that's not possible.
But or I desirable. Hope,
yeah, but I hope relationship between the political parties should be civil.
Are we not civil?
No.
Right now?
I don't think so. I think we are so Machiavellian in our dealings, in the way we do things. We make use of this and that. We play a lot of games, political games. I think there has to be civility for a start. And I think when you have that, it is easier for difficult issues to be resolved. Because I understand as much as you can use reason, you still have to have people to understand it and accept. Acceptance comes from relationship. That's why I feel that it's necessary for our leaders to set good examples. And if PAS and AMNO can work together, why stop there? Mm. Why can't AMNO, PAS, and everybody else also friendly? You know, this Mawfakat thing is just to win votes. But I'm not looking at that. I'm looking at resolving fundamental issues of the country. Mm. So I think the more cooperation we have, Sabah, Sarawak, you know, for example, you know. I mean, Sabah and Sarawak have their own agenda, of course. You know, they want 30% of the oil, you know.
Which is promised to them.
Yeah, but they should promise me too, Kelantan. How come they don't? We are also oil producing. So, our politics has always been convenient, expediency. It is not about fairness and welfare to those common. This is how you bring people together. I think Kelantan and Terengganu should get an increase of more than 5% as well. Why should Sabah and Sarawak get from 5 to 20? But we did that because of votes.
What would it take
so
now?
I think,
who would lead this conversation? Are there any honest brokers? Is there anybody who occupies a position that can bring the different parties? I'm not talking just about political parties, but also civil society leaders, intellectuals, religious leaders who have, some who have been weighing in on national matters and actually causing more division rather than unity. Mm. Who could play that role of bringing everybody together?
I have no answer to that. I just feel that we have to encourage that culture. That's all I'm saying. We should look at the welfare of the people, the country first, and then talk about those issues. And when we talk about those issues, bring them in. And we explain to them why the solutions don't work. I mean, for example, I don't see how getting together, PAS and AMNO, for example, would solve other problems. There's nothing to do with race. How? How do you do land reforms just because they're together? How do you reform Islamic institutions just because they are together? It needs a wider team, you know. And I don't think, that is why I feel that we should temper our criticisms and we should be more open to listening to their points of view. And hopefully we build consensus, but of course slowly.
Okay, the last minute that we have, a pressing matter that seems to be in the news every day, the question of transition between Dr. Mahathir and Anwar Ibrahim. Do you have any views on that?
Well, I think my views are quite well known. I was in a party to that agreement, but there was an agreement. Some people say 2 years from the date of the election. But obviously the dates are not stated in the agreement. So what I find especially difficult to understand is if you all have, in good faith, sat down 2 years ago, you must know what's the basis, the substance of the agreement. So all I'm asking is, this is the sort of conduct that will build this country. We have to honor what we have promised. So that there will be no more fission, no more political battle, there will be no more infighting. So if leaders can set good example, and the good example is this transition. You know, if there is such an agreement, I don't know what is inside. But if it is 2 years, then it has to be 2 years. If it is 2.5, it's 2.5. Be frank with the people. Why do we waste so much time talking about this and that when we can move on to other things? And I can give you other examples where honesty and integrity and some fairness in our position as leaders would help solve a lot of problems.
That's right. Well, you know, keeping promises is the bedrock of trust, right?
Yes.
That's how you maintain and build that trust. Okay, unfortunately, that's all the time we have on Consider This for this episode. We'll be back with you same time tomorrow at 10 p.m. for another episode of Consider This. But for tonight, I'm Melissa Idris, with me, Sherrod Curtin, signing off. Thank you for watching.